Hello, and welcome to our Children's Rights in Action podcast series. Here at Children's Parliament, we believe that children should grow up in a world of love, happiness, and understanding. Our mission is to inspire greater awareness and understanding of the power of children's human rights, and to support the implementation of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, or the UNCRC, into Scots law. We're looking forward to sharing this with you through our conversations. Today, we want to focus on how we make children's rights real through the lens of empathy.
Hello, and hello, Autumn.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us today. This is one in a series of conversations that Children's Parliament is hosting in our Year of Childhood. And it's about a number of themes that are of interest to us when we work with children and when we talk about rights-based relationships. And the kinds of things we talk about are kindness, empathy, trust, the core idea of human dignity. And I'm delighted that you could join us today to talk about empathy. So welcome.
Thank you.
For our audience, this is Dr. Autumn Resh Marsh, who is based at Edinburgh University, but we'll find out a wee bit more about your work in due course. So welcome, Autumn. As you know, we're interested in children's human rights and the experience of childhood, and we like to start our conversations by asking people to tell us a wee bit about their own childhood, if that's okay. What would you like to tell us?
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the United States. I've been in Scotland for about 20 years, but my childhood was in the USA. And I was born in 1976, just to orient people. So I was saying to my own daughter, there was no internet back then, and she can't quite get her head around that. How did you find things out, mummy, without Google? So we had our ways. But my family moved around a lot when I was growing up. So we lived a lot in the countryside, and I had a lot of freedom as a child to kind of ride my bike where I wanted and play in haystacks and build forts in the woods and that kind of thing. And I always seemed to have a wee gang of pals that, you know, we were always on some mission to do something. So it was a happy childhood in many ways. It got harder as I got older. And I think my parents were struggling to find their way in the world. They were very young when they had me. So it's a strange time, isn't it, when you kind of emerge from the bubble of the child world to have more and more of awareness of the wider world of, you know, your parents' concerns and politics. I remember being really aware of the Cold War, you know, kind of some of those things. And when Chernobyl happened, actually I have a vivid memory of that. So it's interesting how, you know, certain things kind of interceded and I became more and more aware of the wider world. But I was very lucky. I had a very, I always felt very loved and had a lot of adventures, even though we didn't have lots of material resources. My parents were good at taking us camping and doing lots of things like that. So I feel very grateful for all of those things and that connection to nature, which is a big part of who I still am, really started in childhood.
Right, thank you. And here you are, you find yourself in Scotland.
Yes.
tell us a wee bit about your kind of professional interests and practice now.
Yeah, so I came here to study as a year abroad at the University of Edinburgh. I was doing studying world religions at the time, actually. So I went to New College and I just fell in love with Scotland and Edinburgh and eventually fell in love with someone that I ended up marrying. And that's how I came to be in Scotland. But I think my journey into social work, because I'm a senior lecturer in social work at the University of Edinburgh now, really began because I did a lot of voluntary work at university and didn't know what to do as a job, but really loved working with people and trying to do something to support people whose lives seem to be pretty difficult, more difficult than my life, and got a lot of meaning from that. So I worked in the homeless sector for about 3 years after I graduated from university and then decided to do my master's in social work, and worked a lot in we called them at the time children's homes or children's residential units. So I began to be really interested in children in the care system. And that's where most of my research has been. So trying to think about how we improve that system and do better job at looking after young people who, for whatever reason, can't be with their families. So that's kind of, yeah, that's my kind of how I ended up in academia.
Right. Great. And then, so obviously today our interest is in empathy, and I know that that's something that runs through your work and your interests. Yeah. So I don't know where you want to start with that. Tell us, I don't know, is it about what it means to people, its importance? I don't know. You just kind of take it where you want to take it.
Yeah. Well, I guess one of the things is when I first started working in the voluntary sector, in the particularly with people who were experiencing homelessness, I started reading the writings of someone called Carl Rogers, who's quite famous theorist, who kind of started a whole movement that's now called person-centered counseling. And he writes a lot about empathy. And he says that it's one of the core conditions. What he means by that is that if we want to be in a helping relationship with someone who's in difficulty, there's certain things we need to always do. And one of those is to be able to empathize with the person's situation. And he writes really well about what that is. So he says that it's about really tuning into the experience of another, and trying to see it from their point of view, so through their eyes, which is different than sympathy, which is kind of, well, I feel sorry for you, I recognize that you're sad. Mm-hmm. It's kind of saying, actually, why are you sad? And what's the particular quality of that sadness for you through your experience? So it really takes quite a lot of imagination to kind of think about the life world of somebody else quite deeply and think about why they might feel or the way they do or see the world the way that they do. And he basically says that if we can do that well with people, it helps to forge a connection that they feel understood by us, that they feel safe with us. And in that space of feeling understood and safe, they can begin to heal if there's things that happen to them that are difficult, and they can be able to kind of make sense of their experience themselves because they're being understood by another person. So in all the work I've done with adults and with children, my experience is that that's really true, that empathy is incredibly powerful. And if you feel empathized with, it immediately makes you feel better. It immediately makes you feel a bit safer. So it's an important starting point. Yeah.
And do you think, is that a common starting point in a profession like social work, or, you know, theoretically we're hearing, you know, why it works and why it's important. But when you were involved in these kind of services, did you find it was typical or explicit? Or is it a more intuitive thing for some people? How was it present?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think in my experience anyway, most people who go into social work or social care tend to be quite empathic people. They go into that line of work because they have a feeling for others. They care about the feelings of others and they want to support and help other people. So I think it's not always explicitly talked about there, but it's a quality that many of people that work in those professions, in my experience, have. I think it is something that we could sometimes talk more about because, as I often say to my students, you know, it's easy to say, but it's actually can be hard to do, especially if the person we're working with, if their behavior is difficult for us in some way, is angry or not very friendly for whatever reason. I think it can be really hard to try and say, okay, well, what's behind that? What are the feelings and experiences that make this person feel that this is the best way of dealing with this situation. It's very easy to just react to those behaviors. We often call them, you know, challenging behaviors, a term I have to say I don't like very much, but kind of to really empathize with people who are sometimes hard to be with and whose behaviors can be harmful to others is really challenging. So I think it's really important in social work and social care and teaching for us to talk about what empathy means to us and talk about the challenge of empathy and what gets in the way of empathy, because I think we can all get better at being empathic.
How do you think children understand empathy or acquire that? Is it something they acquire? Is it something they begin to understand? How does it work in childhood? How do they express it or understand it, do you think?
Yeah, well, I won't claim to be an expert in child development, but I've read a lot about it over the years, and I'm also a parent myself. So I think I've got some understanding for it. I mean, it's a bit controversial. So some people think, you know, it's really not till you're 5 or 6 that you can properly empathize as a child, whereas other people say it's earlier than that. But for sure, what we know is that the kindness and care that we're given as infants and toddlers helps us, is the foundation stones for us learning how to empathize with others. So it's the bit about whoever's looking after us tuning into our emotions and mirroring those and helping us to have a language for feelings. And beginning to develop self-awareness, because if you don't know your own emotions and can't name those and can't regulate those and describe those, then it's really hard to do that for another person. Mm. So I think the first step is that. And I think good early years practice is all about that. So the example of, you know, workers who really will say, oh, you know, if a child's distressed in a setting, oh, I can see, can everyone see John seems upset? Why do you think John might be upset? What do you think we can do to help John? Kind of constantly trying to help children identify and name emotions and think through how they might be able to help. And not just telling children, you know, you should be sad for John, you know, do X, but helping them to really imagine and think, well, why is that for John? So I don't know if that answered your question.
No, absolutely. And I'm just kind of thinking about, so is that kind of expressed through friendships and peer relationships? Is it a kind of practice, if you like, that they have to pick up?
Yeah, I think so. And I think children really can help each other with it. And I was involved in some research not too long ago, which was about children's transitions into primary school. And so the children we were talking to were children who had experienced forced migration. So they were refugees and asylum seekers. And there was a story of one little boy who, when he'd last been in school in Syria, the school had been bombed. Which was obviously a terrifying experience. And then the family had had to flee and had had a long, long journey to come to Scotland. So he was due to start school. As you might imagine, if we empathize with this little boy, going into a school building for the first time when his last experience was something so, so traumatic was really a big thing for him and his family. And in the study, the professional I was talking to was describing the incredibly empathic way that the school handled this. So they really tried to imagine what it must have been like for this family. And they had a long process of helping him to have visits to the school, see where the school bells were, because the loud noises were a bit of a trigger of anxiety for him because of his experience of being in a war zone. They let his mom come in for several weeks and sit with him in the class. They were just incredibly caring. And really gave space for him to develop friends as well. And what the mother we spoke to said was that that was the biggest turning point So all the things that the school did to help him feel comfortable and in the environment and feel safe were helpful. But when the other children began to welcome him in and include him, that's when he most started to relax. And actually, interestingly, across that study, all the parents said that that was the turning point when they were seen and recognized and included by their peers. That's when their transition and their settling really happened at school. So I think friendship is absolutely core for all children, not just children, obviously, who've had such difficult experiences. But a lot of the research says that that social emotional side of the curriculum, you know, that that's where we should put more of our efforts, because when we're relaxed, when we feel safe and understood and empathized with, that's when we, our brain can start to engage with the other learning, like the reading and the writing and the arithmetic. So yeah, friendship is core, and those opportunities are really important. Mm.
And how do you think that might have impacted on us all over the last kind of year, 18 months, when those social relationships have kind of have been impacted? And I guess a lot of the work that you've done is with people who have kind of struggles, challenges, you know, who'd already experienced in some kind of social exclusion or difficulties. I don't know how. So, you know, where does empathy sit in amongst all of that more confused and disrupted relationships?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because it seems like there's quite a bit of evidence emerging now that mental health has taken a downturn for all of us, for children and young people, for adults. It's been such a stressful time, hasn't it? And I think a key stress, I mean, I've definitely seen it in my own children and other children that I know, just not being able to see your friends regularly, not having that contact, has just made them feel a lot sadder and a lot, you know, there's a lot less opportunity for play and creativity. But I think one of the things about that is that we know ourselves in relation. So when you go to school, well, my daughter, you know, to school today, you know, as soon as she's entering the playground, people say, oh, hi, Alice, you know, how are you doing? And all those moments of exchange, your being, who you are, is being affirmed. I am Alice. I am, you know, I am known by John, and I am known by Kova. I'm known by all these people. And that affirms who I am. And makes me feel a sense of belonging in the world. And I think when we're cut off from friends, we feel that kind of, yeah, just a bit adrift. And I think that's partly why the pandemic's been so hard. And I think for children as well, I mean, we could talk a lot about this, but I think empathy is embodied. So it's all very well to be on a screen and to say hi to your pals and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to have someone be able to pat you on the back or to kick a ball back and forth, to run around together, to play hide and seek, the kind of physical time together is different. And I think bodies probably play a role in empathy more than we often think of it as a cognitive thing. I imagine how you feel, but how you feel is also a physical thing. And sometimes you can be with someone and have a sense of how they're feeling without them saying anything. It's just almost like an energy. It's a feeling you get around them. And having to do things on the screen, I think, gives you just less sensory information that's helpful if you're trying to empathize with how someone is, or they're trying to empathize with you. So yeah, I think there's all sorts of ways in which the pandemic has been really hard for us in terms of empathy and friendship, definitely.
Yeah, and it feels very difficult to do that as a professional person with teammates that you know well, you know, that kind of disconnect. So I think at Children's Parliament, we're trying to make people focus much more on re-establishing relationships and be a bit less concerned about the so-called catching up, you know, the kind of the reading and writing and whatever. And we know these things are important, but for many children, it's that social relationships, addressing anxiety and isolation, that these things core business, really.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, just catching up on some of the adventures and the memory making that is such the joy of childhood, you know. Yeah, I think it's really important. And I think we can't, the other thing is we can't catch up if we're anxious and if we don't feel confident and heard and seen and included, because our brain just is too worried about these other things. So it can't relax and get into the curriculum because it's not feeling safe. It's not feeling calm and a sense of belonging. So yeah, I think it's definitely unhelpful to get the over focus on academic catching up. Everything, it's all connected. Mm. We have to remember that.
Yeah. I mentioned we have, you're probably aware, we have sort of these set of national outcomes. And one of the things about children and young people is that it says they should grow up in an atmosphere of love, happiness, and understanding. Mm. So the love and the happiness bit, I kind of get, and I always feel like the understanding bit is lost. It's almost a kind of quite a weak word in a way, you know, and we've been talking about empathy and occasionally you've mentioned understanding, but it's, I don't know, there's something about empathy that's much more powerful as a term than just being understood.
Yeah.
Am I making sense on that? Empathy seems quite a powerful thing to me that you can, it's also something you have to choose to be. And take time to be.
Yeah, it's a kind of very deep understanding of someone else and their experience. And yeah, I keep coming back to the idea of imagination, which is why I think poetry and literature can help us with that, because those mediums take us into the experience, the minds of other people, and give us a very strong experience. Okay, well, so what was it like? My daughter's been reading a lot of these Jacqueline Wilson books. She's really interested in Victorian childhood and how children back then, how they were treated and what their experiences were. And she's really upset by it, you know. How this was before children's rights, mummy. This is terrible, you know. But it really, she could have a history lesson that give her the facts of how children were treated. But to hear the story of a little girl growing up in a workhouse because her parents died of cholera and having to do these tasks and eat these things and what that was like from the inside for that little girl just brings it to life in a way that, you know, a lot of other material wouldn't. So I don't know if you want me to, but I've got a few books as well that I could mention that if people are interested in using with children, I use with my own children, I've used with children in social work, because I do think stories can be a really good way into very deep conversations with children about what empathy is, but it also gives them an immediate experience of empathy in a way that other things maybe don't. And film too, actually, can be a really good medium. So it's finding the right thing, but having those conversations that help children develop their awareness is really important.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we'd love to, we'll get a list of those books and we'll promote them along the conversation. That would be really helpful for people, I think. So just kind of coming to the end of our time, we are interested, of course, in the human rights of children and young people. And we use empathy as a kind of characteristic of rights-based relationships, along with kindness and trust. And does that sit well with you? Do you kind of see that empathy has an important role if we're trying to understand children's human rights?
Absolutely. I think that If we empathize with children's experiences, then immediately we care about their rights and we want to support them to be able to kind of exercise those and understand those. I think it's really easy for adults to forget what it's like to be a child. Even just the physical thing of adult, you know, always having to look up at adults and what that's like, you know. So I always try to try and get, especially with smaller children, to, you know, get down on the floor immediately and just be physically eye to eye with them. That's just a kind of small example, but really, if you imagine from their point of view what the world is like, which is what empathy is all about, and how it might feel for them, and what their story has been, you know, so the little boy from Syria that I was speaking about, you know, you really understand his story, then you can find ways to make life so much easier for him, and enable him to have a full experience of school, in a way that otherwise he wouldn't have. So empathy matters so much to good practice in any setting with children. And it, like I said, it's hard work, but if we listen to children, we give them opportunities to tell their stories and talk about their feelings, and then we can make use of that to help us as adults to empathize with what it's like and find solutions as well with them to the things that are bothering them or the things that they're finding difficult. But yes, I think really important to think about empathy as a kind of core bit to making rights real, making them actually happen, because it's all very well having the lists written down up in classrooms, but it's the practices that adults and other children, you know, do that make all the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Autumn, that's been fascinating. Thank you. I really appreciate your time and all the thought you've given to this. And yeah, we'll be posting this shortly. I'll let you know when that's happening. But thank you. Okay. Really enjoyed that.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you ever so much for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to learn more about our work, please visit www.childrensparliament.org.uk.